Welcome back to WordBalloon.com, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, a conversation with writer Mark Miller. Earlier this year, Mark had to take a lengthy doctor-prescribed rest period connected to his case of Crohn's disease, but the writer has recovered and rebounded with strong stories that fans can't get enough of. There's the Ultimates team book with Brian Hitch on art, the recently wrapped up run on Ultimate Fantastic Four with artist Greg Land, and the current publisher-wide crossover hit, Civil War. Marvel's Civil War takes its story from today's political issues, asking the question, should heroes register and reveal their identities working on behalf of their government or be treated as unlawful vigilantes? The story has garnered mainstream media attention for Miller and Marvel from news sources like ABC, The New York Times, and The Colbert Report. We'll talk to Mark about the origin of Civil War and get a sneak peek at projects that are coming up in 2007. But first, our conversation begins with the two of us acting like old ladies, marveling at the quality of our long-distance phone line from Glasgow to Chicago.
It is amazing how much better your phone sounds compared to Brian's, Bendis's.
But that's because he's cheap.
I was going to say, it must
he's probably got a tin can with a big string on the side of it, just to save money.
I think you're right.
It actually has an unusually clear line. I mean, this sounds like you're just in Glasgow.
This is what I'm saying. I'm amazed at how wonderful the sound is.
I think it's our futuristic technology over here, you know, that's helping things.
You guys have always led the way.
Exactly. Especially in gaining weight and violence.
Hey, and speaking of which, I wanted to ask, how are you feeling? I understand that you have put weight on and things are doing better with the Crohn's situation.
I'm doing great, which is good because earlier in the year I was doing absolutely awful. You know, at the beginning of the year,
yes.
I was saying to everyone, hey, I'm back, you know, and don't worry about things, you know. And then, as it turns out, what I didn't realize is sometimes the drugs they give you for these things can open you up to things, you know. So a flu that you could normally shake off in 2 weeks, it made me such a softy, you know, that I ended up sick for over 10 weeks. And I was in hospital and everything. I just had nothing to fight it with, you know. It was absolutely horrible. But what that did do was it gave me this incredible realization of my mortality. And I thought, I'm really going to look after myself. So I've become like one of those really dull health freaks. And I'm exercising every day and I'm eating as much meat as humanly possible, you know. I mean, I'm like some kind of animal now, you know. I have meat for breakfast, meat for lunch, and then half a chicken for dinner, you know, every day. And I'm out running all the time and everything. So the weird thing is I'm actually turning into this, you know, sort of young male model kind of guy.
Absolutely.
But I'm looking actually surprisingly healthy. And I was at a family do on a Sunday. One of my nephews was up. And we all got together, you know, all 30, 35 of us or something, all went out for a meal. There's 24 nieces and nephews plus like my brothers and sisters.
Wow.
And we all got together and everybody was saying, oh my God, you know, because I suddenly looked like not on the verge of being hospitalized or, you know, and I've lost my kind of beer gut and everything. So I don't know, I feel as if I'm losing myself here, you know. I'm starting to look like a normal person, you know.
Let's talk about Civil War. And I'm not going to bore anybody with, we understand what the situation is. I look forward to issue 4 when it does come out. That's
well,
fine.
Funnily enough, I actually just got an email about 2 seconds before we were speaking from Tom Brever saying that's just gone to the printer. So all good news, it's all coming out in the day it's supposed to come out.
Wonderful. That's great. And I know we're waiting for the big moment because Thor showed up, so
I'd forgotten. It seems so long ago. You know?
You're not alone. That's okay. And I expect nothing but twists and turns for the next 3 issues. Not to mention the rest of the Marvel Universe. Are there plans for? And I don't need specifics, but will you be working on any stories yourself spinning out of Civil War?
Well, I kind of I'd like to, you know, but Civil War's actually ended up being such a colossal piece of work, you know. I mean, I'm normally kind of slow, you know. Normally an issue takes me at least a week, you know, a week and a half on average. But Civil War has been a very intense thing, you know. It's taken up a lot of time, and each issue has gone through, as Tom will clarify, about 6 drafts. So I wanted to do something that would immediately spin out of Civil War, but now I'm going to do something that will come out a bit later. It definitely is, you know, a follow-on from Civil War, but it won't be out certainly in the kind of spring as it originally planned.
Okay.
Which is a shame because every bugger is going to make a fortune out of all the setting up I've done here, you know. But it was actually great in that regard too, though, because, you know, it's not very often in your career you get to come in and do something as kind of wide-ranging as this, you know, and Joe and everyone's just been brilliant, you know, whether it's been chipping in ideas or just okaying my stupid ideas, you know, they've been really good like that, you know, just saying, look, do what you think works, and if it doesn't, we'll stomp down on you, you know. And, you know, they've been brilliant. I've no complaints, and I love complaining, and I've actually no complaints. It's rotten. I'm going to go back to DC just so I've got something to moan about. You know?
And I'm curious about one project that did get put to the side, and I saw some preview art from it, and that's your 1985 story, which is the Fumetti. And for people who don't remember what Fumetti is, it's photography that is set up to look like comic panels, and it's basically the comic format, but instead of it being painted art, it literally is photography.
Yeah, I fancied doing something that was a little bit offbeat, you know, because, I mean, I've been very, very lucky. I mean, the 5 years I've been at Marvel, all these books have been pretty big financial hits for them. You know, it's been big top 5, top 10 books, you know, everything, apart from Trouble, the romance thing I get top 20 bloody doing, you know. But everything's been pretty big. So I just thought, you know, I kind of like slightly more offbeat projects. That's the sort of stuff I tend to read myself. And it really is just coincidental that for some reason the stuff I've been doing has been kind of hitting the mark and selling a lot of books. So I thought, I think I'll do something that's just a little bit more unusual, more like the sort of stuff I maybe started out doing. And that was 1985, and it's quite a personal project. It's something I was really interested in doing for a couple of years. And I wrote it all very quickly about a year ago. But the type of art is going to take a little bit longer than planned. And Marvel didn't make any official announcement about publication, but I was so excited I shoved it all up online, but probably about a year too early, you know.
Okay.
So I think we're looking towards late spring, maybe even early summer before this appears now, which is good because I won't really have much out until towards the end of the year next year. I'm taking on a huge project, certainly the biggest thing I've ever undertaken. Now I've just started working on it, and it's involved a huge amount of research because normally, you know, I'm pretty lazy and I tend to just sort of try and you know, get by, but this actually was a huge undertaking and I had to do a lot of work. I'm having to read an awful lot of material for this, and I'm starting it now, but the research is going to continue probably up until Christmas. The project won't be out until later in the year.
Is this a Miller World project, or is this
No, it's Marvel. No, there's only one Miller World project I'm going to be able to have time to do now, possibly two. They'll both, if they do come out together, about appear around the beginning of 07, but otherwise it's Marvel all the way, you know.
Cause, okay.
I've got a commitment to Marvel to do a certain amount of projects, and because I missed a chunk of time earlier this year, the books I'm going to lose because of that are the Miller World books, because they just kind of come out because I'm into it, as opposed to any contractual agreements, you know.
I want to get back to Civil War because something I saw on your message boards, which I thought was really cool, the short story you did where it was an exchange between George Bush and Tony Blair, and then kind of, you know, Blair kind of remembering the person he was in his youth, the protester, and I think a guy, you know, that maybe wonders if his values have changed and is kind of ashamed of that change and has a real heart-to-heart moment with Bush. First of all, where did that appear?
It was a newspaper here called the Sunday Herald. It's a broadsheet paper. I'm not sure what the American equivalent would be, but it's probably the sort of biggest selling kind of quality newspaper in Scotland. They've got a kind of interest in comics, and they tend to cover my stuff, you know, maybe twice a year or something. They'll phone me up and ask me what I'm working on.
Okay.
And they said, you know, have you got anything you'd like to do for us for virtually no money? And I said, well, yeah, I'm always happy to do stuff if it's short, that's a little bit different, the kind of thing I can't really do at Marvel. And there's something quite nice about doing something for the home audience too, because over here superheroes aren't such a big deal, not in the same way they are in the States. They're not part of the sort of cultural establishment in the same way they are in the States. So most people are completely unaware of what I maybe spend 60 hours a week doing. And my family genuinely believe I'm unemployed. I mean, they think for years I've somehow managed to pay the bills, because every time they come round, I'm sort of in my pyjamas and I look unshaven and everything, you know. And they're like, oh, God, poor Mark, you know, I hope it works out for you someday, you know. And I kind of like to remind them every now and then that I do a job, and some people do actually read the stuff. So the only things they're impressed by is things like maybe an article or something or out for a newspaper or a little two-page thing like that appeared. So it's kind of nice, you know, just to keep my hand in it, that kind of stuff.
I was almost hoping for that kind of scene in Civil War. Is President Bush going to make any appearance in the story?
I don't think so, actually. No, I don't think President Bush appears. You know, maybe sort of shot from behind or something for one panel, but no big deal, because I feel I've already done that in Ultimates.
Yes.
Bush appears quite a lot, and he appears quite prominently in the last couple of issues, so I didn't want to be covering too much of the same kind of ground. You know, I feel as if, you know, you get away with that once or twice, but you can't really become like an Avenger or anything like that, you know.
Although I bet he'd want to. Do I get a cape? I think if he got a cape, I think he could clinch the deal. Where did the idea for Civil War come from?
Well, it actually came from a batch of places. I hope I don't offend anyone by saying it, you know, but there was an idea for a crossover that wasn't very good that was supposed to be coming out this summer. And I remember Brian and I were sitting at the meeting hearing about this, and we were like, oh my God, you know, it's a good story, but it's not a crossover. And we were sort of whispering to each other, you know, this is a bad idea. And we were sort of sending little notes back and forward to each other like that when we were at this Marvel Summit. And then we started kind of thinking, well, you know, maybe we should step up to the plate here, you know, because we're supposed to be working at the company. Maybe we should try and come up with something. And Brian, being conscientious, went back to his hotel and had a think. And I just went out with my pals that night and completely forgot all about it, you know. And then I just, I get in a car next morning with Brian. And Brian said, listen, I've got a great idea for a crossover. S.H.I.E.L.D. versus the Marvel Universe. And it sounded really cool. He said, I've set up some of this stuff in New Avengers. It's the idea that all the superheroes have to unmask. S.H.I.E.L.D.'s coming after them to make them register and become superheroes that work for the government. And, like, you know, we thought that was a good idea, but the only thing is everybody had been complaining that S.H.I.E.L.D. Were being overused, and some of the projects coming up were going to have a lot of Nick Fury and a lot of S.H.I.E.L.D. in them.
Okay.
So that kind of sort of made us think, well, maybe not, you know. And I had this project that I can't tell you what it is. It's the big thing that I've been working on, and the subtitle of it was Civil War. And I can't say anymore without giving away what I'm working on next with Brian Hitch. But the idea was Civil War, and it was all about, you know, one group of superheroes taking on another group of superheroes. So I kind of merged the two ideas together. I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if maybe instead of S.H.I.E.L.D. versus the Marvel Universe, it was the Marvel Universe versus the Marvel Universe, it was brother versus brother.
Sure.
So that, you know, I kind of stole that idea for myself, because it was something Brian Titch and I were planning for the following year. So, you know, I kind of, you know, pilfered it from a few little places, and then once we came in and told Joe and Tom Brevoort and everybody about it, everyone got quite animated, and Jeff Loeb came up with the great idea. Once we said it's Cap versus Iron Man and friend against friend, Jeff came up with a great marketing plan. Whose side are you on? Which was so simple, you know, it just crystallized the whole thing.
Wow.
So, you know, it was one of those projects that had many fathers, but, you know, so, but they're not getting any money.
How was Steve McNiven chosen for Civil War?
Again, that was one of those things. I really was planning on taking a big break, because there's two screenplays I've had to write, and I was, you know, the doctor had said to me, look, you didn't take any time off at all when you were first diagnosed. I'd like you to take a bit of time off, just rest up, get fit. And I said, well, okay, I'll just do this little 7-issue project. And I didn't expect it to take up such a huge amount of time. And I was kind of looking for ways to get out of it once I'd pitched it. And I said, look, the only way I'm doing this is if I get to work with Steve McNiven, knowing that he was committed to something else. But Steve was like, oh, yeah, great, I'll do it, you know. And Steve came over, which was great, you know. I mean, Steve's one of the best 3 artists in comics just now, you know. So I've turned down projects in the past that are really big and probably great for your career, just because I don't like the artist. I'm really, really snooty about comic art, because I can only write maybe about 26 books a year. That's about as much as I've ever managed. So I'm not going to spend all that time working on something if I'm unhappy with how the art looks. You know? So,
sure.
So I think, like, guys like Brian Hitch, Steve McNiven, Frank Quitely, John Romita Jr., and really just a handful of other guys. Or else, honestly, I would rather just sit out in the back garden doing Sudoku. Yeah.
Will we see you? Now, you say you're working on 2 screenplays. I assume one of them is Wanted.
I'm not doing the screenplay for that. No.
Oh, okay.
No. I was too stupid back then, you know, because I sold Wanted a couple, 2.5 years ago or something,
yes.
A while back. And it was just some producer phoned up and said, hey, we would like to buy Wanted from you. And I was like, great, yeah, you're American, and you're going to pay me money for this. This is great, yeah. And I you know, didn't negotiate anything. You know, just said, do what you like, you know. And I was so impressed. And it was only later everybody said, do you not realise, you know, you could have at least had a first draft at a screenplay and everything, you know? So I was just happy to get a call from America. I was impressed enough with that.
Sure.
So, yeah, well, but I learned, you know, for the next thing, and I've made sure that other things I work on now, I'll at least get a first pass at a screenplay, and, you know, then they can get their own guy in to make it good. You know?
So can you talk about the screenplays or no?
I can't tell you, specifically what they are, you know, but one's a superhero thing and one's a horror thing.
Okay.
But both exciting, you know, both good fun. And it's funny because it doesn't really feel like I'm doing extra work, and I'm even sometimes doing it in the evenings once I'm finished my comic stuff, because a lot of people say this, but writing books is so different from writing comics, and writing screenplays is so different from either of them. And it really does use it like a different set of muscles. It feels like you're working your arms instead of working your legs or something.
Sure.
You know, it's great, though, you know, because creatively it's exciting trying something new. And I still don't know if I'm any good or not, you know. I've never seen anything up on the screen yet, you know. So it feels very much like starting out all over again. That's kind of exciting.
Are you working on any novels as well?
I actually got offered something about 2 years ago. It was one of those things, again, you know, where I was just quite flattered to be asked, so I immediately started working on something. But then comic deadlines got in the way. Like, comics is what I like best.
Sure.
You know, it pays well, not as well as Hollywood and everything. It's this a dream job I'd wanted to do since I was 5 years old. So I've always been very reluctant to not be doing that between Mondays and Fridays. So the other stuff I kind of see as little extras, and it's a nice little sideline. But comics is really what I want to do as a career.
It's so interesting to see international writers approach American subjects, because you kind of get a look at the American society through a different point of view.
Yeah.
And it's always fascinating to see what someone like yourself takes out of the Marvel comics and spins in his own way, much in the same way that it's been fun to watch Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman and Grant Morrison and you know, I'm only naming British writers, but you know what I'm saying. And that's one of the things that's so interesting about Civil War, is because when you boil it down to its essence, it really is classic Marvel characters acting the way they always did, even back in the 60s, where heroes are fighting each other. And you always kind of had that, and it was kind of a silly thing, but it you know, and of course everything was always resolved before the end of the book. But it seems like it, you know, you're kind of, you know, tapping into that kind of vibe in a much more adult way and with much tougher issues.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because I said in some of the interviews before this came out, I said, you know, on the one hand, you know, this is some kind of, it's got some socio-political subtext, you know, if you want to be poncy about it. But, you know, at its heart, it's really Marvel superheroes fighting each other the way they always did. You know, I think you could read Civil War if you're 10 and still get it. It's just, there's been an argument, guys are fighting each other. It's a pretty simple idea. And it's an essentially Marvel one, because DC characters tended not to have that kind of misunderstanding and fights that Marvel characters always seem to have. And I loved that as a kid. It's funny because I don't really notice my stuff or Alan's stuff or anybody's stuff really being that different from Marv Wolfman or Len Wein or whatever. You know, to me it all just seems like comic writers. And I'm always fascinated when Americans do spot like a different accent to the writing.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting, because obviously to me I just sound like anybody I hear on TV or any American film star or whatever, but clearly I've got a Scottish accent to an American, you know. And it's the same with writing as well. You can't notice your own voice really whenever you're looking at the stuff. But to me, you know, I grew up in a period where a lot of interesting, kind of quite quirky Marvel books were coming out. Like, we got what you guys were reading in the early 70s and the late 70s, so my first experience with Marvel was that kind of quite creepy and quite unusual stuff, like the Steve Englehart stories or the death of Gwen Stacy or whatever.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, my very first Spider-Man comic, you know, most people think of Spider-Man as quite a bright and breezy character, but the very first experience of Spider-Man I had was Death of Gwen Stacy, and the issue was Spider-Man accidentally breaking his girlfriend's neck and then accidentally crucifying the father of his best friend with a goblin glider, you know, and sort of having a nervous breakdown and then going home at the end crying and seeing his best friend Harry on drugs. I'm like, what? I was like six, and it was the first Spidey comic I'd ever read, and I knew I liked it. I didn't know why I liked it so much, but I wanted to come back for more. So to me, Marvel always seemed a kind of creepier and scarier place than DC. DC's characters were very primary coloured and very, very much establishment, where Marvel always had that slight tinge of realism in the anti-hero there. So I think, if anything, I'm just really trying to carry on that tradition with all the stuff I do at Marvel.
See, that's fascinating, because as someone who has only in the last 10 or 15 years come into reading the 2000 AD stuff, that's the kind of strange and interesting you know, feeling I get reading a lot of British comics, and I'm always thrilled. And I read Red Razors, by the way, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, great.
The collection.
I mean, I had no idea what I was doing at all back then, because I grew up, unusually living here, I grew up not reading 2000 AD. I really didn't read it until I started working on it, which is why the stuff I did was so bad. I just missed it entirely. I read American stuff, quite unusual among my friends by the time I was in high school. Everybody read American stuff at primary because the Marvel UK stuff sold very, very well here. It was repackaged and sold to children in the same way that Pokemon or whatever was sold a couple of years back. Just every kid in my class read that stuff. But by high school, I was the only person, really, maybe one other guy, reading American comics, and loads of kids were reading 2000 AD. It was a very cool thing to be into. But I seem to miss that entirely. Which is odd, because my stuff is very like that now, but I don't know if that's maybe just a British thing as opposed to people who grew up in that 2000 AD tradition.
Yeah, and I'm not sure either, because, yeah, it just seems like you guys go a little darker and a little funnier and, you know, really just dark humor, which I love. I think it's fantastic. And
well, I think culturally it's, you know, probably the fact that Britain collapsed after the war. You know, I think it's just losing our empire gave us a slightly different skew in the world. Like, America's roughly where we were in the previous century. You know, like, the American century was the 20th century, really.
Yes.
That's where it became a world power. And 100 years previous, we had the British Empire and thought we could do anything as well. So you guys have got that feeling of invincibility, whereas we have that feeling of fragility, maybe, you know, and knowing you can get hurt. And maybe that's the difference in our stories as well.
And maybe that's why, as you pointed out in a very good Newsarama article as well, that so many interesting stories are coming out right now because of the turmoil the world is in right now. And I think you very correctly pointed out that, you know, in the midst of the 80s and Watchmen and American Flag and so many interesting stories that were making social comments, you know, there was a lot of crap going around, and Reagan and Thatcher were flinging it pretty hard. And we're kind of at that point again. And you're right, maybe that is why the 90s kind of sucked, because things were calm.
I really think it is, because in periods where things are great, there's nothing to react against. And you know, we are all essentially cartoonists. You know, all the writers I know can draw, and all the artists can write. You know, we are writer-artists, and we're very much in that tradition of political cartoonists. And at our heart, we're probably satirists in a lot of ways, too. And all the best political cartoons are done in periods of madness, you know.
Sure.
And the 90s was just lovely. You know, the Cold War ended. We had Clinton. We had Blair coming in. Even the conservatism, it was kind of compassionate conservatism. We had guys like Bush Sr. and we had John Major over here.
Mm-hmm.
The world was a kind of safe place. And there was kind of 10 years where nothing really happened. And that was reflected in comics as well. And sadly, you know, for comics to get good again, we had to plunge into what looks like a World War III with the Middle East. But, you know, comics are looking pretty good. That's the one upside of this terrifying period we're living in right now.
Are there any direct, and obviously Civil War does touch on a lot of similar issues, and you can see the comparisons to what's going on in the real world through Civil War. Is there more direct political comment that you would like to make on the side, if you get the time, to really deal with some of the harder international issues?
I think if you go too far into it, then you lose your readers a bit, you know, because stories got to come first. But I would say probably an even more political book than Civil War, certainly I would say more, is Ultimates. Because Ultimates is, you know, if anything, Ultimates is a more political book, because it's all about what happens once you send Captain America into the Gulf. It's directly what is happening right now. Ultimates 2 has really been about that. And I didn't want to play that up too much, because it's the sort of thing that could cause problems for Marvel.
Sure.
I played it up in the story, but in terms of publicity, I didn't want to drum it up too much. You know, like, Marvel heroes go to fight in the Gulf is just such a great headline. But I've purposely just not mentioned it in the press at all. I've kept that pretty quiet, because I didn't want to have any editing going on my stories. I'll wait till the story's completely finished and then talk about it, probably whenever the hardcover comes out, you know. But, like, you know, it's probably more political, I would say, than Civil War. Civil War's about America at war with itself, whereas Ultimates is all about America at war with the rest of the world and the potential ramifications of that, where in Ultimates Volume 2 we saw China, Russia and some Middle Eastern countries all getting together and invading America, toppling the Statue of Liberty and just taking over to stop an aggressive foreign policy.
I've been enjoying the Ultimate story. I look forward to its conclusion. And I,
oh, me too.
And I won't. I was going to say, I won't give you any cheap shots about
the thing
that.
Is, you know, the, what I say to everyone is, look at everyone else's art and look at Brian Hitch's art. He's just so bloody brilliant, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of those things, too, you know, where I keep saying this to people, you know, guys like Hitch and Quietly and Cassidy and everything. All the movie people are just coming after these guys now.
Yes.
I don't think we're going to have them much longer. Like, I've got one more project with Hitch definitely planned. It's the big thing we've been talking about for a couple of years and is what I've started working on now. But see, beyond that, I really think we're going to lose those guys because they don't make a huge amount of money because they work so slowly.
Yes.
They probably make a lot less than most people think. You know, there's guys like John Romita Jr. Who can be brilliant and do two books a month.
Right.
But Brian, on average, it's maybe every two and a half months something comes out there. So he's on at least half the salary of most artists, you know, even though he's on maybe a slightly increased pay rate.
Certainly.
So, you know, they're getting great offers. They're getting really good offers from Hollywood, these guys, not just the storyboard and so on, or working in animation, as traditionally happens back in the 70s and 80s. But these guys are getting offered big directing gigs or maybe production manager jobs where they could be earning 20, 30,000 a week or something. And it's so much more than they're making in comics. And I don't know, I just appreciate every page I get from guys like Hitch right now because I know a year or two down the line we're not going to have them.
I'm wondering, though, it seems like, and you even make the point yourself, there always seems to be a new generation of guys that do come along and are you know, not Hitch, but certainly equally brilliant on their own merit and stuff. And that is part of the cycle. You yourself, you even point out guys like Len Wein and earlier 70s writers, Englehart, guys like that, Roy Thomas, were replaced by the Moores, the Gaimans, and those that came after. It's funny because your fear that they are going to go to Hollywood. You know, those guys were even getting Hollywood nibbles back in the 70s. I know Roy Thomas and Jerry Conway and Len Wein, you know, they all have screenplays that kind of, you know, made it to the option point as well. These are writers. Certainly from an artist standpoint, I understand what you're saying. I mean, look at Joe Madura, who was making more money. That's why he left comics.
Yeah.
But it is. It is kind of the cycle of comics when it comes to the attention of Hollywood.
I know. In the past, Hollywood has been interested before, but in the same way that we maybe would occasionally get a Superman movie or 10 years later get a Batman movie, what we have right now is something incredible. You know, we have this huge amount of comic-based movies, not just superhero, but comic-based movies.
Yes.
All in production at once. And they all seem to be performing very well. And even the ones that aren't are being massively outweighed by the ones that are. So in the same way that weird bearded guys were all sort of brought in the late 60s and early 70s into cinema, and back in the 1930s, you had guys like Michael Curtiz and all these great European guys
yes.
all coming over.
Absolutely.
What a lot of people are saying, you know, like different producers and different agents have said to me, that Hollywood's interested in the fact that they've been snapping up all this comic book stuff for the last few years. That's been getting quite a lot of interest. Maybe the next wave of guys could be the comic guys, you know, all these bald guys kicking around, you know, maybe they're the next wave of guys coming in. And that thrills me on one hand, but it also worries me on the other, because I kind of love comics, you know, and
sure.
I don't want to see all the books I like going away, you know, because Hollywood's coming with big bucks. And it's obviously something guys can't turn down. It's a lot of cash and maybe a massive lifestyle change. I know a lot of comic guys put so much work into things that they can almost be on the breadline sometimes. A lot of them are very wealthy, but other ones, they really are just doing it for love. They could be making money elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be kind of very tempting if somebody's throwing down $1 million for an option, which tends to be the price now for one of these big movies, and just getting guys to come and work in Hollywood. You know, that kind of scares me a little. And again, now that Hollywood know where we are, something that they've never done before is come and take people en masse the way they have been over the last year or two. And so many guys I'm talking to are saying, well, I'm not going to have time this year to do as many comics as I had last year. Instead of doing 3 or 4 books a month, I might do 1 or 2. And that's horrifying because I think you're going to have less and less books out from some of your favourite creators over the next couple of years. But I think what will happen in the end, just speaking to guys who have worked in Hollywood, is it might be well paid, but you don't have that degree of autonomy that we have in comics, where you can do the kind of story you want to tell, mm-hmm. and it reaches the page almost word for word the way you want it to be in comics. Whereas in movies, so many guys, and there's so much money kicking around, so many guys have got a say in your story. And I think people will get fed up with that pretty fast. You know, so hopefully that's the one thing that will keep everyone in comics.
Maybe there will be more filmmakers like Robert Rodriguez who can really take the creator into the full creative process and give them the license to, you know, I mean, as you know yourself, the technology is getting to the point now where, you know, it isn't as hard as it was to make your own film. And mm-hmm. maybe, you know, I know Oming even, you know, plays around and does little, you know, silly things, but...
Porn movies? Yeah.
You saw that too.
He keeps asking me to star in them, you know. With I've got two rabbits and a hamster.
Do you have a porn name? If you know ever approach, that's always.
You know what I do? I've got a great porn name. Actually.
Go ahead.
It's Darky O'Hare. Because the first pet I had was Darky, and my mum's maiden name was O'Hare. You know, so Darky O'Hare is fantastic.
Fantastic.
I don't feel I could live up to that porn name. It's a good one.
That's great, man. Hey, I want to ask about podcasting, because you're about to jump in the waters, and I'm thrilled. I'm really glad that all you guys, you know, kind of see the fun of this and can see the connection that you can have to readers beyond message boards and the fan letter page and things like that. So tell me about your podcasting plans.
Well, it's just something, you know, I realized you could do, because it suddenly seemed very exciting to me whenever the internet came up. And you could have that direct interface with readers. Round about that time, I was starting on Authority. And when an issue was coming out, and I was writing one a couple of issues down the line, I could talk about it directly to people. And the feedback was actually really interesting, and I found it quite kind of helpful sometimes as well. You know, sometimes not, but sometimes very helpful. And I thought, this is amazing. But it just sort of seemed to be a step towards the podcasting, which seems even more exciting. You know, the idea that you can hear a creator's voice and ask people questions directly. I think that just sounds great. You know, again, it's probably the step towards something else, but it seems like the evolution between that kind of interface between fans and readers. You almost don't have to go to a convention anymore, because creators are probably so accessible now compared to how they were before.
Sure. It makes it easier, too, to explain a project. And that's one of the things that I always, you know, I'm happy to give creators the chance to really... beyond the paragraph you might get in a previews catalog, mm-hmm. to really talk about, you know, a book and really go into, you know, the detail of it to really get a possible reader interested in picking it up.
Yeah, and the people sometimes can't be bothered sitting, you know, reading through a six-page interview as well. And it's also, it's a pain sitting typing that up as well. That can be a morning's work.
Sure.
I just get on the phone for half an hour, it's great, you know, and people can listen to it on their iPod on the way to work.
Now, I'm not
in the real world,
and I'm not fishing for compliments when I ask, but what podcasts do you listen to? I know you're a big Ricky Gervais fan.
I'm such a Luddite, to be honest.
Really?
I'm really only very, very recently getting into podcasts. Like, the Ricky Gervais ones were the first ones I listened to regularly, and yourself and Fanboy Radio, I even discovered relatively recently. And then that's it. So I'm talking the talk, you know, but I'm not walking the walk, you know.
Oh.
But I love the idea of it, but unfortunately I don't really have a real job, you know, so I can't really play this stuff in the car or on the train or something. All I do is really walk upstairs, you know.
Sure. Not much of a commute, I understand.
Yeah, but if there was a lot of stairs, I would definitely play an interview on the way up, you know.
I'm really looking forward to it. You're doing it with two friends?
Yeah, I mean, my accent's impenetrable to normal people, but I've actually found someone with an accent even worse, which is a Spanish guy who's a good pal of mine called Carlos. And Carlos is a moderator on Miller World as well.
Okay.
And he's great. He's absolutely hilarious, Carlos. But the great thing is, I'd say probably only about 50% of the audience can understand one word I'm saying, you know. And Carlos, no one will understand it. So between the two of us, and we've got a guy from the north of England called James as well, it's going to be the worst podcast ever. We're only going to do six of them. We're going to do one a month.
Okay.
And do six, and they'll be available on the website. But and people can just send in questions, and the guys will read them out. and then we'll just talk crap for like an hour, you know. But it's exciting, you know. We'll see what happens.
That's outstanding. Hey, I loved your piece on the television morning show when you were talking about Superman.
Oh God, yeah, that was a bizarre thing.
Well, I felt so bad for you because, you know, whoever the other expert was,
yeah,
really seemed to dominate the conversation. I'm like, Jesus, Mark's written Superman. Let him talk. My God.
I know, it was one of those things where there was supposed to be two guests, and they ended up with three. They sort of double booked them, you know. And, like, there was the girl who, they were actually promoting a show about the Curse of Superman,
yes,
that was on that channel. So they had that producer, and they had Paul and I both on, really doing the same thing, you know. And I also made the mistake of showing up drunk as well, which wasn't a good idea. And I think they were kind of panicking slightly, you know, and probably just trying to talk over me, you know. But I was absolutely on best behavior. You know? But yeah, it was kind of weird. And it's funny because it was one of the few instances of my life where I actually had a use for all the Superman knowledge that I've acquired over the last 30 years, you know. And it's funny because people were saying to me, oh, when did you become a Superman expert? And it's like, I've got every Superman comic from the last 45 years. I've got Christopher Reeve's cape hanging up in the house, you know, and it's,
yeah,
all I talk about, you know.
Plus writing.
So, like, yeah, it was the one place where anyone would have been interested for 5 minutes, you know.
Well, as much as I'm enjoying your Marvel work, and I truly am, I'm glad that you did mend fences with DC because you kind of left with what happened with the Authority, but also... Mm-hmm. When we read Superman Red Son and you go back and read those great Superman adventures, it's like, you know, you're very comfortable with these characters as well. And I look forward to the day, whenever it is, that you are able to go back and kind of play with those toys as well.
I know, I'm glad, you know, for two reasons. Just personally, I'm glad because I do like the guys over there, and I always got on well with Paul, you know, so, like, I was glad just, I mean, it was absolutely my fault. I apologized to him. I just said, like, it was completely out of order, you know. And Paul was great, you know. Paul was saying, like, don't worry about it, you know, these things happen, you know. All creative people are eccentric and crazy, I suppose, to some extent, you know, and Paul was good about it, you know. He said, yeah, the door is open, you know. And I like the guys there, you know. I mean, I love the Marvel guys, you know, because I've worked day in, day out with them for the last nearly six years now. So I would feel funny leaving Marvel just now while those guys are there.
Sure.
And I'm really enjoying it as well. It's great. The DC stuff I grew up with, you know, so although I grew up with the Marvel stuff too, you know, the DC information is hardwired into my DNA. I know that stuff so well to the point where I'm slightly pathetic, you know. I mean, I know everything. About that stuff, so, you know, it would be nice. And there's a lot of characters I have an affinity for as well, like Superman, Batman, the Justice League. I mean, I could write that stuff in my sleep, but I'm really happy at Marvel, you know. And I feel as if the last year or so I've got especially happy there, you know. It's coming into the Marvel universe proper. I can just suddenly kind of feel part of that big lineage that I was reading when I was 5 or 6 years old, you know, Harry on LSD and all that kind of stuff. So it feels kind of nice being in there and doing something that shakes it up a little bit too, and hopefully be doing something that people look back on in the same way I look back on the stuff from my childhood. Like, oh God, that was a weird time when that stupid Scottish guy, you know, was writing that book where they were all fighting each other, you know, or whatever. And that's cool, you know. And the next thing I do is equally ambitious as well. So it'd be nice to at least have done two big Marvel Universe projects that people remember.
Well, and you're being, you know, modest in leaving out two big things, and that's Marvel Knights Spider-Man, but even more importantly, the Wolverine arc, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. I just thought it was such a wonderful story.
Okay, and, I'm glad you liked it.
Oh, it really, you showed, I think, Romita at a level of art that I wasn't expecting. I know he's a great artist, but sometimes you take it for granted that he is a street-level artist, or at least I always felt like his art worked best in street-level stories, and you put him in this big epic thing of, you know, Wolverine hanging out for dear life on the back of the Sentinel, and just all the hundreds of, you know, ninjas that he was fighting, and just,
yeah,
that berserker story that really called for a cast of thousands, and he was up to the task, and you were up to the task.
Well, Johnny and I are going to work on a new project together. The next Miliworld book is called Kick-Ass.
Yes.
And instead of a cast of thousands, he wants a cast of tens, he said. You know, he's just fed up drawing a million ninjas versus 100 mutants. But he's a genius, Johnny. I mean, genuinely, I don't work with anyone at all. I mean, I'd rather just have no money than work on a book I don't like with an artist I don't like. And Johnny, I've wanted to work with since I first saw him. And especially when he really raised his game with stuff like Man Without Fear, and when he went on to do Thor with Dan Jurgens, mm-hmm, when he'd Klaus Janson inking him. I just think he's amazing. I'd say he's probably the best storyteller in comics. I think he's absolutely brilliant. Nobody can do a fight scene like him. So I'd say 90% of that Wolverine run looking so good was really down to him. He really is. He's great. And I had a great time on that book as well. It was just, it was going to be one of those little books I do a little run on and nobody really cares. And to our surprise, it ended up being a big hit. Ultimate Fantastic Four kind of went like that too, because I was kind of doing Joe a favour. Joe was saying, like, I've nobody to follow Warren on the book. Could you come in and maybe do a few issues? And I just got so excited about it once I started. It worked out really well. I stayed for 12 issues. But again, it was a book we expected nothing from, and it ended up outselling the Ultimates by its final issue. So there's just been a lot of fortunate accidents for me, I think, over the last few years. I've kind of stumbled ass backwards into these big selling books, you know.
And fortunate for Marvel, because it was a great run on Ultimate Fantastic Four, dovetailing into the idea of Marvel Zombies.
Well, do you know, it's funny, I pitched this, right, 2 years ago. And before I was doing Ultimate Fantastic Four, and everybody said, that's the worst idea I've ever heard, you know? I'm not kidding, they all did. And like, I was so annoyed because I said, this is brilliant, you know, the zombies will be great, you know? Imagine a stretching zombie and a zombie that can turn into flames and everything. And they were going, that's pathetic, you know? And I'd flown all the way from Glasgow out to New York, and I came up with this on the plane out there. And it was Axel who actually came up with the title Marvel Zombies. For me, it was Punisher versus those characters. He was going to be the last human alive versus all these zombies, you know. And like, and everybody, I'm not kidding, at the meeting, universally it was derided. Everybody said, that's garbage, you know. And then I went off to meet someone, I was meeting a friend, and I came back in next day and everybody says, so when are we doing this zombie project, you know? And everybody loved it by the next day. And I don't know what happened, you know, but honestly, everybody hated it. And I felt embarrassed leaving the room, and somebody said, oh, we flew you 5,000 miles for that rubbish, you know. But that's when Joe said to me, look, do you want to do, instead of doing the zombies thing, do you want to do Fantastic Four? And we'll just spin the zombies off out of it, you know? And that sounded good, but just time meant that I couldn't do the actual zombies project. But they got Robert in, who did a brilliant job on it anyway. I think he did a better job than I would have done, because my idea was just Punisher shooting zombies for 5 issues, you know? Whereas, you know, he brought something to it, you know?
And I loved how both books showed the same basic scene of Galactus fighting the zombies. You know, that tie-in you know, that's fantastic. I mean, and again, that's old-time Marvel.
Well, do you know, that was actually incredibly lucky. It was a coincidence because, I knew what my ending was going to be in Fantastic Four. I knew that Doom was going to be walking through into the zombie world and finding, to his horror, you know, Galactus lying there with zombies all crawling over him and eating him, you know. And then I thought, oh, I better say something to Robert about this, just in case he's got any plans for Galactus. And I emailed him, and he said, are you kidding me? That's how I'm ending the book as well, you know? I'm not kidding. It really, it was a bizarre coincidence. We both came up with the same ending, and it just dovetailed really nicely.
That's outstanding, man.
That's idiots think alike, I suppose. You know?
Well,
so it was good fun. I must admit, though, it's the only book I've ever finished where I genuinely felt sad, because everything else, it felt like a natural end. I'd maybe come on and thought, well, I only planned to do a year on Wolverine or a year on Spidey or whatever. And Ultimates was always planned as 2 years. Well, 2 years, like two volumes,
right.
5 years. but Fantastic Four, I had about 3 years worth of stuff. And just with other commitments, I just couldn't hang around. And honestly, it was like they'd prize it from my cold, dead fingers. I really was absolutely loving doing that book. And like I say, an issue normally takes me at least 10 days. And I was writing those issues in about 4 days, which for me is, like, superhumanly fast.
Sure.
So I was really sad to leave it, and I'd love to go back and do more Fantastic Four at some point. I would absolutely love it. Like, maybe do the regular FF or something a couple of years down the line. You know?
That's wonderful, because, yeah, I understood and appreciated where you were coming from in terms of creators not staying around too long. And I also think that sales almost dictate a need for there to be a shakeup every 6 months or 12 months, just to kind of keep things fresh on the book and you know, make fans excited. It's a shame that just good quality stories sometimes aren't always appreciated. There are the exceptions, like Miller's Daredevil, like Bendis's Daredevil. But I think you're right. I think lately people's attention span maybe is only good for, you know, one arc or two arcs. So it's nice to hear, because you were so great on Fantastic Four.
Oh, thanks very much. Thanks. But like something that occurred to me when I saw previews a few years ago was that things only get promoted when it's a new run on the book.
Right.
And Wizard and all these things on the internet are only really interested whenever it's something new. So to see, hey, guess what? I'm on year 8 of my Thor run, you know? Like, nobody cares. I'm like, brilliant. We've read the first 7 years, you know? It's not going to get any better. And, like, and I feel quite sad about that because sometimes it'd be quite nice to come in and do a long run. But then also there is the other side. I can rarely think of a run that was as good in year 2 as it was in year 1. And certainly a run that was as good in year 5 as it was in year 1 or 2.
Sure.
You know? And some people say, oh, well, you know, sometimes you just have to get through those 30 rubbish issues before you get back. You know, you find a new reservoir of great ideas. And I'm like, yeah, but the reader has to spend $3 a month, you know,
sure,
for you to find that reservoir of good ideas again, you know. And I always say that to people, you know. So I don't know, I think we're kind of in a period now where most people, I think, are looking towards 1 or 2 year runs on books. You know, I know certainly Jeff Loeb does that and quite a few other guys now.
Yeah. Well,
and I think it's quite a healthy thing as well because it recharges the book every year or two.
Yes.
And I would love to see just big-name creators coming in and doing a year on a book and then jumping onto something else, hopefully revitalize another title. Like Jim Lee has pretty much worked like that the last few years.
Absolutely. No.
And it can, you know, reinvigorate a title for a year or two after it's gone just through sheer momentum.
No, I completely agree, and I hope you will recharge and come back to some of the people that you've briefly, you know, touched, like, you know, even the ones in Civil War, but also the Fantastic Four and, you know, even the Ultimates and stuff. I hope you come back to those worlds.
Well, it's funny. A friend of mine, you might not have heard of this program. There's a show here called This Life that was on in the 1990s. It was a very kind of big program on the BBC here, mm-hmm, about a group of young people all in London who all worked as lawyers. And a friend of mine is writing and directing a kind of reunion show of it 10 years after. And I thought that would be quite interesting, you know, like doing volumes 1 and 2 of The Ultimates and then doing something set 10 years later or whatever, you know, but a while down the line, like Brian and I go and do other things for a while.
Sure.
And then maybe come back in a few years' time. You know, it'd have to be at least 5 years for it to be interesting. And where are they all now? You know, they're all off doing things. Some are still superheroes, others aren't. Some have gone into politics. Some are working in convenience stores or whatever. You know, they've all gone off and done different things. And I like the idea of that. But generally, there's so many cool characters that I think I'd just like to do a little year on everybody. I'd love to do a year on the Hulk, a year on the FF, a year on Captain America would be bliss. He's probably the character I enjoy most.
Very cool.
I've done Spidey. You know, tons of even semi-obscure stuff. You know, like I really like the Defenders.
Very funny in the Ultimates, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Outstanding.
Silver Surfer. Any of these things, you know, I think you'd have to be an idiot not to be able to get at least 6 good issues out of all these classic characters, you know. And I think our careers are so finite in a pop medium like comics that you won't always have the opportunity to get to write these characters. So I think, you know, while, you know, the fact that my stuff sells well just now, it's nice to have the opportunity to write these guys. I'd like to write as many as possible. Blade as well. I mean, everybody laughs, but Blade is the one I desperately want to write. And I feel very jealous when I see Howard Chaykin, who's one of my favorite artists, working with someone Blade. Because I just think, oh, God, I wish I'd had, you know, that extra few hours in the day to do Blade with Chaykin.
Do we have time very quickly for your dream list of other all-time great artists that you'd love a chance to work with?
Well, I've been very, very lucky, actually, in that I all the guys I really respect have pretty much had a chance to work with recently, you know. Over the last few years, I've had such a run of luck when it came to artists, that, you know, from Frank Whiteley through the Kuberts, when I started working with Brian Hitch on Ultimates, through guys like Greg Land, now Steve McNiven, John Romita Jr., like I say, somebody I've wanted to work with since I was like 12 or something, you know. I even worked with Kurt Swan just before he died.
No way.
Tragically, I think I actually wrote his last issue. And it was a really bad taste comic, and I've always got this horrible feeling that I've upset Kurt, you know, because, I mean, he died about 6 weeks after he handed in the pages, you know.
What comic did you work with on Kurt Swan?
He did one issue of Swamp Thing, and I was trying to kind of juxtapose the Norman Rockwell beauty of his artwork, and he's probably my all-time favorite artist, with the most sickening bad taste story I can come up with, you know. And Kurt put a little note in with it, you know, saying this guy is sick or something, you know, like, and with the art, which one of the editors hung on to. So even guys like Kurt Swan are very lucky. I got to work with Steve Ditko on a project that nobody's ever seen. It was a 6-page Dark Side story over at DC. and it never ever saw print, but it's all lettered and drawn and everything, you know. Oh, wow. So I've been incredibly lucky, you know. The guys that I haven't worked with yet, I would say, are guys who I'll probably never get to work with because they're mainly cover artists now, but guys like Travis Charest, mm-hmm. and Adam Hughes and so on, Kevin Nolan is brilliant.
Wow.
But really, I'm lucky, you know. The guys I like, I'm currently working with. Newer guys can be great as well. I love Ryan Sook. I'd love to do something with Ryan Sook at some point. But that's probably about it, you know. I'm pretty fortunate who I'm working with at the moment.
Well, you've been very kind with your time, Mark. I know you got to get going, and I know you've got dinner commitments. So I'll just wrap up and say thanks a lot for coming on. You sell yourself short, and I know Bendis does as well, in terms of you guys say, yeah, we're popular now, and then, you know, time will come and a new generation will come. But I have a feeling that there's a place for you guys at the adults' dinner table when the time comes where...
as waiters.
But a healthy tip is waiting.
But at least I've got hair. I've always got that over Bendis. I've got an excellent head of hair, you know. I've actually got hair to spare. You know, since I've been on steroids, I've got hair all over my body as well. So I'm thinking of combing some of that off and giving it to Bendis when I see him at the next convention. You know? I know he'll be very grateful.
Well, you're always kind about, you know, pointing out the improvements in baldness. I noticed that on the message board the other day.
Oh, but I see myself as the Mother Teresa of comics. I'm looking every day. I'm out there looking for a cure for the curse that blights so many of my friends, you know, like Brian Vaughan as well, and poor Brian Bendis. It's a shame. We should have some kind of appeal, you know, like we should maybe drop the whole actor thing for a little while and try and get some kind of bald fundraiser.
A telethon. While, you know? Yeah, I think a telethon. I think you're ready once you're done with podcasting. That's what we'll see you doing. Please give today.
You would, when you see the little faces, you know, when you see the little faces and how happy they'd be with hair, just Photoshop hair onto those guys and how happy they look, you know.
Well, I look forward to more new stories from you, Mark, and thank you very much for the time today.
Thanks for having me. I'll speak to you soon.
A great conversation with writer Mark Millar. Don't forget, Civil War 4 is on time and just a couple weeks away. And also, make sure you check Mark's message board at millerworld.tv for information on Mark's upcoming podcasts. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. If you're new to the show, there's lots more free downloadable interviews at our website, wordballoon.com. And make sure you go back to the website for updates on upcoming episodes. This is John Suntress. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2006.